This is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 1027 in Gauteng and FMR in Cape Town.
Well, Winston Churchill once said, in finance, everything that is agreeable is unsound and everything that is sound is disagreeable. And so we muddle through. Ian Cruickshanks, Chief Economist at the Institute of Race Relations, is in studio to give us the first take on that GDP beat at 2.2% quarter on quarter. Ian?
Certainly, Michael, better than most expectations, a lot better than my expectations. I wasn't sure we were going to get a positive number anyway. But remember, it's from a very low base. So that means it's not as impressive when you take it into rand value terms as it does appear at first sight. So, yes, it's an improvement, and that's the basic, the first requirement, but I don't think it's necessarily going to be a lasting turnaround. You know, at this sort of level of activity, we're not really performing in any attractive way from a long-term investment point of view.
It's still not good enough to be growing at an annualized basis of 0.8%. Yes. It's slightly higher than what the IMF and the Reserve Bank had penciled in, but by 0.1%, which is really nothing. When you look at the grander scheme of things, and we're growing below our population growth rate, yes, it's anemic at best. Can we at least look at the numbers and say that the momentum is now building up in the Ramaphosa economic recovery, or is this all just a base effect story?
Well, it's primarily a base effect. It may be a short-term turnaround that we await to see. Where should we be? That's the big question. Let's look at the BRICS group of countries. Take India. You know, it's always said, well, you know, we're the leader, but we're not. They're growing at 7.5% on an annualized basis, and they feel they should be doing better. Heck, we can't even get to 0.5%, or to marginally better than that. And we say that this is celebration time. No, I think it just goes to remind us we've got a heck of a long time to go on sorting out policy uncertainties, political uncertainties, and until these are sorted, we're not going to make any lasting headway.
Out of the sectors that performed ahead of expectation, I think manufacturing was the big surprise for many commentators, and the surprise being that it had been a laggard for so long. Agriculture bounced, but we expected that coming, yes, from the drought-afflicted numbers of the first and second quarters. What's the key driver in that turnaround in manufacturing?
I'm not unsure about that because, you know, the biggest sector in manufacturing is vehicle manufacturing. And the interesting part there is that sales in November were down. Now, I know this is the November comes after the third quarter, but nevertheless, it just says, I'm not happy to believe that we're going to get a lasting turnaround in manufacturing. And you mentioned agriculture, and of course, the third quarter is when the maize crop is brought in, and that's a massive boost to the sector, everything from the marketing of maize itself to new tractors and combine harvesters and everything else has a big impact. So I don't think that we're going to get that same impact in the next quarter. So maybe this is just a bounce, but I will wait with bated breath to see if it's going to be lasting.
A big driver on the expenditure side was household expenditure. Households, yes, getting out in the third quarter and spending a bit. 1.6% growth in that third quarter, contributing 1 percentage point to total growth. On the negative side of the balance sheet and the ledger, gross fixed capital formation. That's what businesses, yes, are investing in, brick and mortar type expansion. 5.1% decrease. Contributing and basically netting off that growth in consumer spending because it shaved a percentage off.
And what does that say? That says, look ahead. We've got no new developments in the pipeline, and I think those that were in the pipeline have now been completed. So I think it's going to be a great challenge for the economy to grow at a sustainable level that's equal at least to the population growth. That means it should be growing at 2%. 2%, and we think that would be okay. Heck, that just shows where we are right now.
Given that, and given that we've only seen the commitments made by the private sector at the investment summit in the third quarter, do you expect to see a turnaround in that gross fixed capital formation number in the final quarter?
I think the problem there is, well, the fact that I can't say yes right away is an answer in itself. I think what we have to look at, what are the hurdles? political and policy uncertainties, and as long as they remain major hurdles, no, the answer to your question is no, not now.
And
not
Parliament yet. Adopting Section 25, well, the report to review Section 25 just takes us one step closer.
Sure. And we're finding we're going to be losing capital rather than attracting capital. You know, one of my favourite numbers is to look at, not attractive numbers though, look at the JSE and say, are we seeing an inflow or an outflow? Because that would say whether there's confidence or not in our potential. And what we've seen now, a record high, 105 billion rand, 105 billion, that's a huge amount, net sales of bonds and equities on the JSE this year to date. Well, there's your confidence level, and I think that if foreigners won't invest, we're going to find a difficult raking up domestic investment as well.
We saw the Rand respond quite positively, and speaking of the markets and what foreign investors have been doing, in response, it rallied all the way to 1356. That was shortly after the announcement. We then had a kind of trundle along period for 3 or 4 hours, and then we had Trump come out with a tweet very late in the day saying this is vintage Trump, isn't it? Yeah. I am tariff man. When people or countries come in to raid the great wealth of our nation, I want them to pay for the privilege of doing so. And we're raking in billions in tariffs, make America rich again. Now, here we were thinking that there was a truce, in a 5-day trade test, and he takes to Twitter, and lo and behold, the dollar strengthens, the rand weakens, and we're back to square one, it seems. Would you be taking money out at this level if you look at where we're at around 1370 odd to the dollar?
I think that we're, from a rand point of view, we're at a level which is a bit of a sticking point. In other words, a dollar support level at around this sort of number of around 1370, 1350. If I was wanting to move money, I'd get my forms made out right now and ready to be signed at a moment's notice.
Ian Cruickshank, stay right there. We've got the US yield curve to talk about when we come back from the break. Let's just find out what is happening on the roads with Pusseletso Peterson.
This is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 1027 in Gauteng and FMR in Cape Town.
Welcome back. With your view from the markets is Ian Cruickshanks in studio. Ian, it's the moment that the world's biggest bond market has been thinking about for the last 12 months. Finally, we saw it happen yesterday. The US yield curve just inverted. Why do we care about that?
Well, I think we do because that says that, there is the demand for longer term funds and the ability to attract these funds and the ability to attract investments at these levels has changed quite considerably. And really, we know that it's normally a technical signal. The age of easy money, of growth through low interest rates, could well be coming to a turning point. And if that is so, I think we could well then see a sharper move in the incline in American interest rates, which would be followed by us in due course.
And that's why the Reserve Bank's decision last week, perhaps to try and get ahead of the curve, no pun intended, seems to perhaps be borne out by what we see happening in the bond market. And the fact is that investors are no longer willing to pay up. They are seeing the risks of a recession significantly shortened now, and probably in the next 12 months. If you look at a report by SocGen, they reckon that the longest bull run in stock market history is on its last legs. They produced a report saying that it's about time that clients start really looking at taking their positions and liquidating them and putting just a little bit more away into cash.
Yes.
And a very interesting report out of Kuehne+Nagel, which is a Swiss freight giant. And they're showing an alarming slowdown in global trade. So that's aligned to what Trump has been doing on the trade front. Not good for global economic growth there. Is that bad for emerging markets? Will we see funds flow out of developed world equities into emerging world equities as their return profile diminishes over the next few years?
I'm not sure about that,
years.
Michael.
Yeah.
I was looking at an index I follow, the Baltic Dry Index, the cost of moving dry goods in big quantities from producers to consumers, and this has been showing a negative pattern for some time now. And I think really it just says that the pattern of trade is changing. If that is so, demand is slipping, supply is still there, and really it probably means we're going to see that inverted yield curve become more important, and we'll see higher interest rates in the US. The rest of the world will follow, and we will have no alternative to just not never mind to attract new funds, to hold on to what we have. It's a losing battle already if we look at what the JSE is doing.
Now, there is interesting news that perhaps isn't entirely market related, but I want to address it nonetheless, right, because I think it speaks to the confidence or the lack thereof in South Africa, and that's the appointment of the new National Director of Public Prosecutions. Yes. The president announcing today that it's Shamila Batoi, and her resume amongst all of the shortlisted candidates shone through. The Citizen ran today, yes, with a story saying that it's likely that she'll be chosen by the president. She's had a time at The Hague. What do you make of her appointment? She seems feisty enough to handle such a poison chalice, but she certainly has her job cut out for her to clean up that orgy and stable.
But she's got international experience. I think she knows how to handle a bit of rough stuff. And I think that I heard an interview with her earlier on this afternoon, and she came on as remarkably self-assured, well-balanced, and the right sort of person. She's going to take no nonsense. I don't think she'll take any prisoners lightly.
Well, according to Corruption Watch, she really does have an illustrious pedigree. Barring a minor incident, a 1,250 rand speeding fine against her was withdrawn when she was the KZN DPP. This was, however, attributed to an administrative error.
Yes, who knows?
Small Inyala skeletons. Well, if that's the most that they could dig up, I'm certainly happy enough to go with that. Talking about Small Inyala skeletons, I've been following what's going on at the SABC with morbid interest, I must say. Minister Stella Ndebeni Abrahams, who was recently shuffled into that department, came in on a ticket of meritocracy, and she was reckoned to be an inspired choice. Now we have news that she is fiddling at board level. That was supposed to be a very competent board appointed by the president. And it looks like a very good excuse to replace the existing board with a more ANC-friendly board ahead of the elections next year. I hope not.
Well, I hope not too, because we really need some stability in the makeup of the control, the leadership of the state-owned enterprises, this being the most public of all. It would be a pity if there is too much of a disruption in that board. And it'll also be a black mark, I think, a negative comment against President Ramaphosa as well, not being able to hold on to those his chosen leaders. Mm.
The one thing we haven't touched on, Ian, is Eskom. And it's as clear as mud as to what is really behind this bout of load shedding. And we've been given stories about units being offline that were not anticipated to be offline, and the issues around Kuberg, and the issues around coal supply, and Cahora Bassa and a line being down there. But ultimately, if we were to have any hope of turning this economy around and building on the momentum that we've gained from that GDP print, we have to be able to provide power into this economy, and Eskom remains the big worry for me.
Absolutely, and I've had it directly from leading international industrialists who said, yes, we'd like to invest in your country, but the first thing, or one of the first pointers, is we have to have a reliable, cost-effective electricity supply. Now, with the electricity regulator looking at a 15% per annum for the next 3 years increase in tariffs, you know, they simply say, we're not going there, and that's all there is to it. We're chasing away protective investment, and I think that prospective investment will go elsewhere. That would be a great shame.
Ian Cruickshanks, Chief Economist at the Institute of Race Relations, with your view from the markets.